The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests, and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions.
Unfiltered opinions.
Sometimes you have ideas and you're not quite sure why.
Does he secure the bag?
Sometimes you meet people and realize there's probably a reason why you stayed in touch.
Just listen.
Sometimes all the pieces just come together by themselves.
Woo! I'm Jimmy Moyaha.
And I'm Simon Brown.
Welcome to Insider Exchange.
Good morning. Welcome to yet another episode of Insider Exchange. Welcome to Market Matters, live streamed for your viewing pleasure every Monday morning or every Tuesday. We're starting to like Tuesdays a lot more.
We might just
throw things around. Today on the show, we're going to be taking a look at every single data point because all of them decided to come out in the same week. We're looking at the biggest week for earnings week in the US. We're looking at South African interest rates. We're looking at US personal consumption expenditure data. We're looking at US jobs data, everything in between. And then we're still going to look at other market matters. We're going to take a look at Steinhoff looking to sell off some of its other companies in the form of the Pepkor holding that they held. We're looking at the country of Botswana deciding that they want to potentially buy De Beers. We'd been talking about who would be a potential suitor for that. And if we've got time, we'll see if we can take a look at LVMH deciding to offload Marc Jacobs. Before we get to all of that, we're back. We've got some really interesting revelations. Now, I thought about this and I realized that part of the problem that we were having with the names was that whoever was writing the names on the cups was a South African. And so if you're a South African and you've met a Nonkululeko, it's easier to spell Nonkululeko. So I thought, let's mix it up a bit. And I went from like easy, medium, hard to like impossible on the name scale. I thought, let's write some Irish names.
Oh, jeez.
Yes.
Is that why actually that's Siobhan. What
the that's heck? It. That is Siobhan, but spelt with a B. Now, I'm going to spell what's on my card, and Sai, I'd like you to guess how it's pronounced. C-A-O-I-M-H-E.
Corn.
Corn. No. Not corn. Are you ready for it?
Yeah.
Quiver. Yep. That's how it's pronounced. That's how it's spelt. C-A-O-I-M-H-E. E is pronounced quiver if you're Irish. So perhaps we'll see if that can be a thing that we can do. We're going to keep finding Irish names. We've got a tig behind the mic.
Can I just be Tundisizwe?
No, but that's the problem,
right?
Easy. That would be too easy for a South African to write down who knows how to spell the name. So the whole idea behind the challenge was to see if we could avoid or get things that have multiple spellings or complex spellings and all of that. But today, when I went in and gave these names, the lady that was writing the names on the cups didn't even bother. She didn't even bother trying. She was like, how do you spell it? She was like, I'm not going to attempt this. I'm not going to get it wrong. She's like, tell me what you want me to write on the cups. So Irish names, seemingly the most complex. If there are more complex names out there, please let us know. Shout out to our TikTok community. Shout out to those that are joining us on stream. Morning, Tony. Yes. We're all fired up as well. It's just that there's so much data to get through. Incognito, good morning. You finally caught the live. Yes, it's been a while. You're always commenting and you're never actually catching the live. So we're happy. We're happy you're catching the live. We're happy you guys are here. Give us your name suggestions. Give us your thoughts around Weaver and Siobhan with a B. But yes, let's get into market matters because we have so much data to get into and very little time to see if we can cover all of it. Do we start with the announcements and then end off with the data? I suppose that makes more sense, right? Let's look at IBEX.
Yeah.
IBEX, formerly Steinhoff, finally selling off the rest of its Pepkor holdings, around 28 billion rands worth. And that would be ordinarily not really an eventful situation. But the last time IBEX tried to sell off some Pepkor stake, it was around 6 billion rands worth. And they were able to sell off the stake. And the moment the money hit the bank account, the South African Reserve Bank was like, oh, wonderful. Here's a preservation order. We're going to take the money. And IBEX then went and challenged that and said, we want our money back.
Yeah.
Seemingly, IBEX has now let go of that. So they've said...
They won a court case back in earlier in the year.
Yes, but now it seems that they're not going to challenge for that money anymore. The question for me then becomes, are you not doing that because you don't want them to seize the other $28 billion that's going to come through from the sale of Pepcorn now? Or is there something more to that?
I mean, maybe they've like reached an agreement of sorts, which says, you keep that.
Yeah, you keep the $6 billion, we'll take the $28 billion.
Yeah, yeah. Which seems, I mean, that seems fair in everyone. I mean, so Saab gets 20%, Alex gets the other 80%.
And so effectively, they've forfeited the 6.3 billion rand to the Reserve Bank as a settlement of sorts, almost in an effort to say, please don't come after the other 28 billion. Now, I don't know if that's been included as a clause to say you will take the 6 billion, but then you will not come after the 28 billion. But the statement was released on Thursday saying that they'd reached a comprehensive settlement between the South African Reserve Bank and IBEX. So 6.3 billion gone, but you keep 28 billion from the new
sale. It does, because it says in fulfilling these aims, 6.3 billion plus interest of IBEX group funds. So the interest is earned by Saab because Saab was sitting on the money. Forfeited to the state in full and final settlement of Saab's enforcement action against IBEX.
So the central bank that issues the loans at an interest rate to commercial banks and that issues money to commercial banks and money into circulation is earning interest on the money that it's issued. Okay.
Central banking. You get to print the money, you get to set the rate, and you get to earn the money.
You do whatever you want with the money. Yes. Well, to be fair, it is your money. Let's move on to De Beers. De Beers and the Botswana conglomerate. So Anglo owns De Beers, but a huge part of that commercial relationship sits in Botswana. Botswana's biggest export to the world is diamonds from the De Botswana business, which is the De Beers Botswana business. Now, we know that we spoke about this when Anglo was looking to unwind this. We looked at potential suitors. It is one of the previous episodes that we've had on the podcast. Dig into that. We broke down who we thought would be the potential suitors for Anglo at the time to buy out De Beers from Anglo. It seems the Botswanan government wants to protect their interests here, and to the extent that they are considering themselves potentially buying this out.
Yeah, and so what? Botswana holds 15%. I mean, we'll get to why do they want diamonds in a moment, but Botswana holds 15%. They have a sort of right of first refusal or some sort of deal. They phrased it differently between Botswana and De Beers. They want to up that. They could, in theory, I mean, they can raise the money, right? Botswana is investment grade, not like us down here where we are.
They're not junk status.
Yeah, we are junk. So they could raise the money probably quite easily via some bonds. I don't think Anglo is going to get very much for De Beers because, well, diamonds, lab-grown diamonds or microwave diamonds, whatever we call them. and the weird stuff is when you walk through the Diamond Mile in Sandton, like there are stores which have in their window lab-grown diamonds. Like there's no embarrassment anymore.
No, but it's not a taboo thing. It was never a taboo thing. It was always one of those, here's a cheaper alternative. Initially, I remember it being pitched as a more ethically sourced diamond, and you can almost achieve greater perfection with it. I think in as much as I agree with the fact that they might not get much for it, the diamond market has really, really taken a nosedive since. I think they will still be in the luxury and ultra-luxury space. And we spoke about this as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I think there will always still be that mark of saying, well, this is a real diamond.
Yeah.
Or this is
we will get
from the earth
and
not something that was made in a lab, you know? But it's the same thing as to why you would have, and this is a weird example to use, but it's the same reason why you would have a natural pregnancy and an IVF pregnancy. Some would argue that an IVF baby is a test tube baby. At the end of the day, they're both babies. They both come out as human beings. You know what I mean? So perhaps there will still be that market out there. Side note, Jimbo noticed that you got a haircut.
I did. Fairly aggressive one, but you know what? Hair grows. It's fine. So we had just quick side note. So I go and I get this at Sorbet upstairs or down the road here. I go into their website to see if I can book an appointment. Their first appointment is October. I'm not that compy, right? So I go to the place. They've got like, they cut my hair immediately. I said, you realize your online booking says October? And they're like, what online booking? Anyway, so Botswana's problem is that their budget deficit is expected to get to 7.5% next year. So there's some squeeze in that regard. And then diamonds. Hey, I mean, shouldn't they rather take that money and go and buy something that is, so there's a thing on Twitter this morning, they want to build a smart city. I don't know about that either, like a Dubai in the desert. But shouldn't they go and get something that's less cyclical, that's not diamonds? Why don't they buy Tiger Brands? No, terrible idea. Why don't they buy Capitec? You know, buy something that's not so, and I appreciate the valuations are different, but buy something that is less cyclical and less in a downtrend. Because to be clear, diamonds, I mean, you know, are we going to see increased usage? You know, is the percentage of real diamonds, earth-grown diamonds, whatever mm-hmm. we call them, mm-hmm. going to increase over time or decrease? It's going to decrease. So why go into a decreasing industry? Why not take this money that you could spend and go and buy something that is not cyclical, like a sovereign wealth fund, but go and buy, you know, some ShopRite?
Because like Saudi Arabia, like the Middle East, the commodity itself is underneath your earth. Yes. It's there. It's not like you have to go and fly somewhere to go and import the diamonds. You just look down, pick one up, and you're like, oh, look, we can sell it.
And in places, actually, more in Namibia, in places you literally can look down and pick one up.
So for them, it's the input cost to acquire the diamonds and to mine the diamonds is far less than it would be for any other country on the planet, quite literally.
Yeah, no, fair point. It is, I suppose so. And diamonds is what they are and what they're known for and stuff like that. I just worry that a small little economy that really only has two things, and that's tourism and diamonds. And to be clear, the tourism part is, it's a little unique. You know, Okavango is amazing, but like, it's not for everyone, as opposed to a beach or a, you know, nightlife or something. So, yeah.
Jumbo wants to know how much Botswana would get for their stake in De Beers as per the latest valuations. Let's have a look. Let's see.
So latest valuation of De Beers, I think, was 10-ish billion, but that's been downgraded repeatedly.
Let's see. We're at about 4 billion, down from about 7 billion. There was a write down in 2024 by Anglo, if you'll remember. Mm-hmm. I think that write down was to the tune of almost $3 billion. So there isn't much more left there. Even assuming that they own 50% of that is 2 billion.
It's down to, 4 billion, and it used to be 10-ish billion. And we're talking dollars here, ne?
Right. So
is this dollars? Yeah, this is
dollars. Yeah, US dollars. So there is the opportunity to acquire the stake at a discount, if you would consider that a discount. But then again, you have to then assume then that the diamond market will start to pick up and recover. I suppose you could find alternative use cases for it. But again, this is something we dipped into in a previous episode with the Anglo conversation. So dip into that conversation, folks, if you've missed that. We're going to move on to LVMH while we have time. They've decided they want to offload Marc Jacobs as a brand. That's interesting. The LVMH stable.
I thought this was a person.
I think it might have been named after a person. Ouch, indeed.
Just quick. It used to be the De Beers valuation was $13 billion in 2010.
Ouch, indeed, James. James said ouch towards that when we gave the valuation figures. So, yeah, that's...
So what does Marc Jacobs do?
Hang on, before we get to that. Incognito said, why don't they expropriate without compensation? Nationalize all
actually,
mines.
Actually, I'm with... Hang on. I'm with Incognito. Yeah. Our diamonds. What is Anglo going to do?
They've done that. If you remember, just before the decision to sell at the moment, the Botswanan government had expressed severe discontent with the fact that the diamonds were mined out of Botswana.
Mm-hmm. They
belonged to Botswana and they were getting a small slice of the pie. Remember, there was a time where it was a 90-10 split, 90% going to Anglo, 10% coming to the Botswanan government. And the government said, we're not going to renew the contract. And it went on for months them not renewing the permissions and the mining licenses. So they'd already started this whole, we want a more equitable share in this. And I remember at the time when that was happening, I sat there and I thought, well, South Africa does gold and platinum, and we rank amongst the top three producers for both of these metals around the world. Yet again, the expropriation conversation is a bit of a weird one, right? So perhaps they'll do that. Perhaps they'll say to De Beers and say, you know what, we're not going to renew your mining permit and we're just going to let it lapse, let you walk out, and we'll reestablish whatever. So I know it's been an ongoing conversation, but we'll keep an eye on that and see how that shapes up. Back to LVMH, Marc Jacobs, who is potentially a person that the brand was named after. It's weird because...
Yo, the oak does everything. Bags, is it an oak? What is shoes?
Yes.
He even does heaven, jewelry, ready to wear, accessories, fragrances, dojo cat.
So think Tom Ford, along the likes of Tom Ford, but I suppose with a bit more...
You and I messed up our lives.
We should have what? Become fashion designers?
Yeah, we could have a Jimmy Mayaha and a Simon Brown, although Simon Brown's a little... we could have a Brown Mayaha.
Okay. What would we do? What would we produce?
All of this stuff. How hard can
it... All of it.
I mean, he does backpacks. I want to see a backpack.
That's true. And they do put quite a hefty price tag on some of these things. There you go.
$250. It is bright pink. $295. But that one's boring. It's denim. Yo.
Yeah, so Marc Jacobs is one of those brands within the LVMH stable that isn't a Louis Vuitton, but is also kind of part of what LVMH has done. They've bought up these smaller brands over time, right? LVMH has done it, Kering has done it, and that's why they're the big conglomerates. Richemont as well kind of sits in that space with the likes of Cartier and all of that under their stable. Mm-hmm. So the big luxury brands have smaller brands within, and sometimes your smaller brand might not perform as well, and so you're like, okay, cool, we're going to get rid of it, right? So that seems to be interesting. I don't know who then buys up a Marc Jacobs, because if an LVMH is getting rid of it, a Kering might not want it, a Richemont might not want it. You have those smaller sort of sports apparel brands, the likes of Adidas and all of that, that might have an interest to go into.
That could be
semi-luxury or a little more premium.
Nike or something. So I thought maybe one of the luxury players, but I'm not sure about that. Private equity is all big and exciting. So deal valued about $1 billion. It's not so much. And it's quite small in LVMH's life. But so, I mean, who would? I mean, the Kering and the folks, surely they're not going to buy it.
Jumbo, while we're on this topic, says, just one lap cloth market matters in terms of what we produce, right? The luxury brands that take care of you. We like it, Jumbo. We like it. Product ideas? What would you want? Would you want sunglasses? Would you want us to do tailored suits? What would you want? That's the big question. And again, the big question also for Marc Jacobs.
Who's Christina?
Who's Christina? Aguilera or the...
They have a Christina.
Oh, brand. The Christina brand. Yes, it's another one of their brands.
I recognize these. These are like cheap. Compared to those Birkins, these are like $350. So that bag you bought your lady, which was like, what was that? There was a...
Which one? The Chanel.
Was it a Chanel? No.
The Louis Vuitton.
LV, yeah. That's right. These are cheap. $450.
Interestingly enough, back on that conversation, another side quest here.
Sorry, we're going nowhere but sideways.
We're moving forward, but sideways, but forward. The conversation that we had around those replica bags, there's another channel that's come up online and everything. People have been raving about that, where you can get the alternatives to the new brands and all of that. And they went directly after a particular brand. They went after Hermès, which Hermès was one of the only brands that came out at that time to say, guys, we know where all our stuff is made. We're the only luxury brand that can show you that our stuff is made in France. Whereas everyone else was like, no, we're going to keep quiet and not debunk any of these claims. But yes, LVMH offloading Marc Jacobs. Some companies, and this is, I think the nexus of this is, some companies have decided to offload non-core assets, regardless of industry.
Sunglasses are ugly.
Again, non-core assets. See? Non-core assets.
Yeah. And it's small in LVMH's life. So at $1 billion, I mean, that petty cash for private equity or Botswana. No, they could spend $2 billion buying De Beers, or they could spend $1 billion buying Marc Jacobs.
Okay. And then what do they do with it?
Well, like sell stuff. Like, you just own it and then you sell it, and then they could do some desert themes and some rhino themes and things and hippos. And no, this would be, okay, back to the thing. I liked your idea about a Nike or an Adidas or one of those sort of people. I suspect that they wouldn't, because I'm not sure that there's much true synergies, and I hate that word. But I'm not sure, and we would say, oh, it's, you know, it's all just clothing and stuff like that. It's not. One is very sport orientated and athleisure and all of that sort of thing. And this is fashion. I mean, this is...
Yeah, but then you don't buy it for synergies. You buy it for diversification.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? So you buy it specifically because you're in a concentrated market and you need to diversify. If you're a Nike, who potentially could be the largest in that sports space by market share, you can't just sit in one industry where you're already the dominant player and expect that everybody else will collapse at some point, right? You've already won that market. Perhaps go into a new market. Incognito says that a company called L. Carterton might buy it. I don't know L. Carterton.
No, can't even spell it.
L. Carterton is a banking company. Mm. See, that's interesting. They've got about $37 billion.
The shoes are even more ugly. Whoa, some of these shoes are bad. Oh, these are the sale ones. Yeah, that makes sense.
So they've got about $37 billion in assets under management, L. Carterton. They have got a pre-existing relationship with LVMH. They kind of have a long-standing partnership as well with LVMH. So perhaps that is a good suitor for it. Perhaps that is a business that then says, you know what, we will take it off your hands outright. It means we get a small piece of whatever, and we get to own it.
And now I'm starting to think, I mean, there are family offices out there for whom, you know, $1 billion, because there's the whole private equity thing or unlisted is alternatives, that's what they call it, is partly as a response to shrinking markets. You know, we always look at the JSE and, oh, it shrunk. Equity markets the world over are shrunk. shrunk in the last 20 years or more. Yeah, maybe a private equity, a family office. And, not my family office.
And the family offices have been kind of looking for good assets to buy up over the last little bit of time as well. L. Cartison owns Birkenstock. They're a private equity house that specializes in fashion, but one of the assets they own is Birkenstock. So perhaps that is a good play. From a private equity perspective, I suppose then, I don't know, for me, if you're buying revenue and Marc Jacobs is performing exceptionally well, then it makes sense. So in the private equity space, it's kind of three things that you're looking for, right? It's good revenues, good cash flows, or you're looking for a footprint if you're looking to do other things in that space. So that could be quite interesting, but we'll keep an eye on that. I think we need to wrap things up with other data that is coming up this week, because there's a lot of that as well. PCE data out of the US, personal consumption expenditure data, that is their preferred measure of inflation beyond the normal CPI data. That will likely give rise to whether or not we get rate cuts and those conversations.
FOMC on Wednesday.
That's it. FOMC is happening this Wednesday. Unlikely we'll see an interest rate decision, but I want to tie in FOMC with South Africa. We have our central bank decision on Thursday, the 31st. Weird to have it on the very last day of the month, but we have our own central bank decision this week. We have FOMC on Wednesday, and we've spoken about this in the past, Si, about the South African Reserve Bank not wanting that interest rate differential to widen too much between the US. We are at a weird point now where the US could potentially hold and we could potentially need to cut.
And that's what happened at the last...
That's what happened the last one. But at the same time, I feel like we might not get a cut. And I know we don't want to hear that.
I don't know how we can't not have a cut. I mean, Nick Kunzer,
who's much smarter than you and I.
I was going to say.
Much smarter. Like, world smarter.
We don't invite him here because it would embarrass us. He tweeted last week when we got our 3% inflation for June. And he was like, it's starting to look like a policy error. The defense is just starting to look like, really, like this is just a mess.
So Nick believes it's a policy error. I see it as exactly what the central bank wants. Remember, if we're looking to reduce the inflation targeting band from 3-6% down to 2-4%, thereby anchoring inflation from a midpoint of 4.5 down to a midpoint of 3. That 1.5% move is a lot. And it'll be the first time it has ever happened in South Africa. And this is the first time since I can remember, since the 2008 financial crisis, that inflation has been this low in South Africa. So the central bank could be sitting there and saying, there's never going to be a more opportune time to implement this. And that means we hold off with another rate cut.
But here's the thing. So inflation is down 460 points. From its peak in August of 2022, 7.6 down to 3. Our prime is down 100. I get your argument, and I get the risks around it, and people like Casey Sprague from Anchor are very, very concerned around the risks, and I get that. I just think 460 versus 100, that gap is a little bit large, I do suspect. And I also think it's a slightly different story almost. So here's a scenario. We change our inflation target to 3%. Cool. And that, by all accounts, that's what everyone is expecting, probably at the midterm budget policy statement in October.
October, yeah.
Yeah. We change it to 3%, and then inflation, which as expected, goes up to 4-4.5 towards the end of the year, and we now have to push interest rates higher to manage inflation. Well, let's get ahead of that curve by having a 100-point cut at this week's MPC. So now that we've cut 200 points, so when inflation does go above the 3% target, we've got some wiggle room to maybe push it higher. Yes, sir.
Can we take the 100 basis points out of the premium that sits between the central bank and the commercial banks?
You're cooking. Well, actually, I'm going to argue.
Because then technically if it affects the market less.
I'm going to argue 100 from each, but yes.
100 from each? That's brave.
Because what you're saying is they charge a 350-point margin above the repo rate,
so,
and they have done that.
Down to a 250-point.
So you want to notice two things. Firstly, they have done that since time immemorial. When inflation was 18% or whatever it was way back in the day, that's what they did. How much did our inflation get to? My data does go that far back. 1986 inflation was 20.7, and they were charging 3.5. Secondly, a little bit of collusion, maybe. Like where's our anti-collusion people?
They sit within the Prudential Authority, I think, perhaps. I don't know.
They should sit with the Competition Commission people.
But central banks are governed commercial banks are governed by the SARB, which then is enforced through the Prudential Authority. But yes, that is going to be our suggestion to Malumile Sechaganyago, is that it's fine if you don't want to cut the prime lending rate to South Africans, and you want to leave that unchanged, but then cut the repo rate, the lending to the banks, cut that part of it down, narrow that gap, and still provide relief to consumers without spooking the market. Because I suppose if you then cut, it achieves the same result. It gives consumers 100 basis points less in interest to worry about. But what it also then does is it reaffirms that consumers have more wiggle room, because later, when you start to cut on the prime side of it, you've already cut on the repo side of it, and that's had a positive effect on the market. Because on the repo side of it, realistically, the only people that are going to feel that pain is the banks, who are well capitalized and don't really need the extra 100 basis points, if we're honest.
Correct, Armando.
There we go. That's going to be our suggestion. That's going to be where we leave Market Matters, folks. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for jumping onto the lives and for chatting with us. We are going to dive into the US-South Africa relationship in the context of the fact that a congressman in the United States, I'm just trying to remember the gentleman's name, and I'll have it for you shortly, has put together a bill to potentially sanction some South African individuals. That bill has gone through, it goes through three layers. It's gone through kind of the first layer. It was put together by a Republican, Ronnie Jackson. He's put forward that bill known as the Bilateral Relations Review Act of 2025 to review the relationship between South Africa and the United States and potentially introduce sanctions against certain individuals. That's going to be our deep dive. We're going to be looking at that, and we're going to be looking at what it could potentially mean for South Africa, not just for specific individuals mentioned in that. So that's going to be out later in the week. Hope you look forward to that. And we thank you once again for joining us for Market Matters. We are diving into the latest calls by a Republican named Ronnie Jackson to introduce a U.S.-South Africa Bilateral Relations Review Act of 2025. The particular piece of legislation has found approval in the House of Foreign Affairs Committee by 34 to 16 votes, and that means it moves on to the House to be voted on, thereafter to the Senate. We're going to take a look at the implications of this and what it could potentially mean for US-South Africa relations. Do you know what? I thought we were having a bit of an awkward thing. Like, I thought it was just a Trump being upset and a falling out and, someone's angry that someone didn't invite them to a birthday party or something of the sort. But this seems to be getting more and more serious.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there is real antagonism from the Trump administration towards South Africa. And to your point, it's not just tariff stuff. And equally so with Brazil, because they are busy suing their ex-president to try to overthrow the government, is currently going through court processes. So there certainly is antagonism towards us. And I think there are perhaps a few things for it. I think one of them is perhaps the case that we took to the ICJ around Israel and genocide. I think some of it is the alleged white genocides that was happening in South Africa, which obviously was whispered in his ear and was bogus, but that's never stopped Trump before. And just a general dislike for us. And maybe there's also some just good old-fashioned deep-seated racism in there. Because, on the ICJ case, I mean, the Israeli lobby is strong in Washington, so mm-hmm. maybe it's that. Mm-hmm. And Washington, more than just the White House, Congress, the House and the Senate, in a sense there. But otherwise, it's just kind of like Trump just wakes up at the Nubian bonnet. I mean, why does he care that the Brazilian former president is being taken to court, being prosecuted for trying to overthrow the government? Because he tried to overthrow a government.
There you go. No, the insurrection was not Donald Trump's fault. You have no evidence of that, despite the fact that he was found guilty on some other charges related to those sorts of things. But again, Si, why? So I understand the animosity if it's driven by something. Right? Mm. And typically, there are a finite number of things that drive the largest economy in the world to take decisions. And that finite number of things and that list of things includes wanting minerals, and therefore wars are declared, right? We've known this, right? That's been something that's happened in the past. Nobody is under any illusions that this has not been in the name of, well, it's disguised as in the name of peace and all those sorts of things. But the thing that I see as a new introduced variable is exactly what you're saying about the Israel case, right? Now, I know a lot of people, a lot of analysts, both in government, out of government, have said that it's not so much to do with that alone, but it's to do with all other factors as well, compounded by the Israeli thing. But for me, we've had currency issues and crises in the past. We've had load shedding in the past. We've had our own domestic issues long before President Ramaphosa became the president of the country. And in that time, there was never a direct move to act against South Africa.
Look, the Republicans have always been way more antagonistic towards us than the Democrats. Mm-hmm. That's just a stated fact. I mean, also BRICS. So if you look at BRICS, right, and with a little S at the end, so he dislikes BRICS intensely because it's and we kind of get why.
But you're not going after the rest of the BRICS countries much. You can't.
Brazil, is Brazil a bit. But Russia, buddies with Putin.
Mutually assured destruction.
You can't do that. Yeah. China.
Mutually assured destruction again.
South Africa.
The guys you can bully. The little guy you can bully. Fair enough. Yeah. Okay, I suppose that then makes
sense. In his first term, I was actually thinking about it over the weekend. In the first term, Trump 1.0 was largely innocuous, I think for two reasons. Because he didn't expect to win, so he had no plan. For his second term, he expected to win and he had a plan. Folks, go read Project 2025 because it's rolling out as we speak and it's fucking scary. And so this time he practically has a plan. It's also then, for example, Ibrahim Rasool's there and then it turns out he said bad things about Trump. Well, no, he did say bad. He said true things, but Trump's a little thin.
Yeah, but so did Nkabisi Jonas.
Well, and where isn't he? He's not in Washington.
That's fair.
So it's that sort of thing.
So then let's get into that, Sai. Let's get into the fact that the key provisions of this act that's now been put forward.
And we're friendly with Iran.
But
to be clear, so was America up until 6 months, 6 weeks
as
ago.
As was Israel once upon a lifetime. Yeah, but we casually glance over that fact.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's get into the nitty-gritties of what's been proposed here. This new bill aims to look at, first of all, a 120-day assessment of the bilateral relations between South Africa and the US, covering diplomacy, trade, security, aid, and all those other things. Mm-hmm. The US has already cancelled US aid, so South Africa's already felt that. Trade, we're already getting tariff conversations. That's been happening. Mm-hmm. Security is something that hasn't come up as yet. Diplomacy has happened already. Ibrahim Rasool, KBC Joe, that's already come out. Security, now I'm thinking along the lines of certain individuals not being allowed into the country. So putting travel bans on certain individuals.
So you use them but you can use the Minsky Act for that.
Yeah, but beyond just saying, and beyond for certain people just saying you're a persona non grata, actually saying you are banned from traveling to the United States. But also, if you have a United States bank account or you have United States assets, those assets are going to be frozen. Remember, Muammar Gaddafi. Gaddafi's assets were frozen from a Libyan perspective as the president there.
Yeah.
Robert Mugabe's had his assets frozen before he passed away in regions like Switzerland. So freezing assets based in other countries is another thing, right? From a South African perspective, and this is where I want to look at kind of the potential implications and ramifications, right? In two parts. Part one, if it's on certain individuals, as we expect it might be.
And there's an argument to be said that freezing assets on government officials who are corrupt is not the worst thing in the world.
Right?
Except for a small problem.
You have to prove that they're corrupt, I suppose. That's part
Zondo.
Of it. Oh, fair.
And that just means like most of our cabinet and most of our MPs. Yeah,
but that wasn't the problem you were raising.
It's what essentially the Minsky Act is, which came, it was Russia and it was Bill Bowden, really good book, and I forget what it was called. Well worth the read. But his friend was called Minsky and that got killed. Was it Minsky? Something like that. And it is around corruption. And I don't particularly think that's a bad thing.
Mm.
But it is weird. We also got to be clear to the Oak who's currently raising it. He gets a lot of money from Israeli lobbyists, etc. I mean, there's some...
No link there.
Yeah, there's some games happening here. But it is a case of targeting individuals is, I think, in some ways better than countries. You want to target the... Because to be clear, if we have got a corrupt government, targeting the individuals is nasty for them, but it's agnostic to the country.
Yes.
If you target the country, like, it's going to hurt us.
Absolutely.
And then I'm angry.
And that's kind of that's kind of what I want to look at, because if we are expecting a targeting of individuals, then South Africans might not really care. They'd be like, ah, okay, cool. If you're on that list, that's your own problem, right? It's like the Epstein list. Yeah, apparently, we don't talk about it anymore. If it's a targeting of the country, it negatively impacts everything from our sovereign ratings to our markets and the liquidity afforded to us by international markets. If you've got a company that's dual listed in the US and in South Africa, that's going to affect
our credit ratings, our bond rates,
absolutely
our currency, our
everything.
There's also some stuff that we have that some of the world wants.
Again, so
platinum.
So you see, now
I don't know, is platinum enough to
is it enough to invade a country? Apparently so, Si. Apparently so.
They're gonna invade us.
We've done it for less. People have done it for less.
I'm too old to be conscripted. That is a good thing. So I mean, yeah, so I think the targeting individuals, I have no problem with that. I think that there should be a lot more targeting of individuals by countries the world over. I'm happy with that. I think it should be rolled out with sameness and not selectiveness.
I have a question around that. And my question is that, what if one of those targeted individuals is the President of the Republic? Now, as a head of state, I enjoy certain privileges as a head of state, right? So I'm allowed to fly and I've got diplomatic immunity and all those things. If those sanctions are imposed against that head of state, does that then mean that head of state themselves is no longer allowed to then travel to the United States? So take Cyril as an example. I imagine we can draw on, again, Gaddafi and Mugabe as previous examples.
He can't travel to the United States.
Okay.
And perhaps other countries. But then maybe he should have put the money in his Capitec account.
Not in the couch.
Just saying. Interest.
Fair enough.
I mean, I don't know.
Okay, so let's run through then from a country perspective. Because again, we've said, yes, it's very nice and happy that it's affecting certain individuals, but that is for them to resolve in their personal capacities, because they were mentioned in their personal capacities. From a country perspective, what we don't want to see is we do not want, whether we like the relationship with America or not, everybody has drawn to one conclusion. We cannot completely function if that relationship goes to zero.
Correct.
We can try to function absolutely. If it comes down from 100 to 80, from 100 to 60, from 100 to 50, or even from 100 down to 10. But if it goes to zero, the implications of zero are there's no Ford operating in South Africa, employing people in South Africa. There's no pegging of the South African rand against the dollar, because that what our foreign currency is pegged against.
With Alphabet and Microsoft and
those companies.
Can I get my Apple?
That's it, right? So again, if the country itself is on a sanctioned list, for example, passports useless in America, you can't travel there, you don't even bother applying for a visa. But like you said, access to certain things. At the moment, we don't even have an Apple here, right? We don't have an Apple in South Africa, and we don't have Apple support in South Africa. I know this because I went down a rabbit hole recently trying to fix an Apple ID, and it was horrendous. I ended up on a phone call with someone in Ireland because there's no support in South Africa. Now, that would mean losing access to American products, firstly, in entirety. Now, so for some people, let's say that's not such a bad idea. That's not such a bad thing to happen here. That also means losing access to the likes of and this is the big part about it, a JP Morgan, a Bank of America, a Morgan Stanley, that then start to underwrite assets in the financial markets, like a UBS, and all of those that provide international liquidity and access for your market to be marketable in other markets.
Yeah. And wouldn't that also, so if the US were to put sanctions on, and to be clear, the current proposal is more around individuals and apparently the likelihood of passing, according to this article, is around 1%, but I can't work out where they get that number from. So if we are sanctioned as a country for being bad, surely that would stop Standard Bank, for example, operating in London, because they're going to say to the United Kingdom, these are bad peeps, how much tariffs do you
want? Are you
want?
An ally, or are you going to side with South
and
Africa?
And that's part of the problem, is that we're not falling in line and bending the knee. And that's the purist in me says, you don't bend a knee to a bully, except of course when the bully's, you know, a quarter of the global economy.
But again, so I align with the purist in you to say, if you're going to keep bending the knee to the bully,
they just come back for more.
Where does it stop? Correct. What does it? So something we haven't really looked at here is, if we were to, as South Africa, go and withdraw the ICJ case, does it make everything go away?
No, because there's still Iran, there's still BRICS, there's still probably just some ingrained racism coming out of American politics, and there's a lot of brown people in our country, us being Africa and all. I don't think think it goes away. I also think it's to your point you made that when you give in to the bully, they don't go home and say, I won that war. They come back with bigger fists.
Well, Trump historically has gone back and said, I've won that war. He likes taking victories.
He does.
He enjoys those.
Sure, no, he will take the victory, but it doesn't stop him bullying. I mean,
it doesn't.
And we've seen it before. You know, China gave him some things and he didn't stop. Although I do note that suddenly tech stuff can now go to China.
The chip conversation's on the table again. They've reached an agreement where they're not going to impose these things on chips. So again, when you bullied China in that situation, you didn't realize the
China
impact.
Has rare earth minerals.
Yes, and the impact would have.
We have oranges and platinum.
Hey, we've got good wine.
And wine.
Very good wine.
Sure, sure.
Some of the best in the world.
And great oranges.
And great oranges.
But I don't know.
See, so and that's the thing, right? It's we certainly don't have the China muscle in fighting back.
Yeah.
And I think we're aware of that. And perhaps that's the approach that Cyril took as the president to say, let's go and see if we can find a compromise, find a middle ground or whatever. But again, when in your life have you negotiated with a bully and it's worked out? Hey, don't hit me. Let's talk about it first. And then let's come to some sort of understanding.
See, I was the other side. I was the martial art person who used to go and stop bullies bullying the old fashioned way, which is just beat them up way more than they could beat up anybody else.
So you were China. Excuse the reference, sure, but I mean, in that situation,
you
would have been China. Because been China. The US did that. They went into China and said, we're going to assert ourselves. And China was like, you can try. Mm-hmm. You can try. Mm-hmm. And the question then becomes for South Africa is, where do we go from here? How do we navigate this? Because we can talk until we're blue in the face.
So how we have to do it is we have to, truthfully, we got to bend the knee in some ways, but not bend the knee in that we just give up on everything that matters. We bend the knee, and with Trump, it's quite simple. It's flattery. You know, and it comes to the point, and I think Peter Bruce made this, where what we should be doing is when all the troubles was going down, we should have invited back in time, back in April or something, we should have invited Trump for a round of golf at Sun City. You know, Gary Player, of course, and we'll get Ernie Els and Gary Player and other billionaires and make sure they're white. And, you know, but that's what Trump is a very, very base man and he likes to be flattered.
So we give him a hotel in Cape Town.
Sure.
I can't imagine.
I know.
For the life
the
of me.
The problem is you'll give him the hotel and then you'll come back next week and say, nice hotel I got there.
But you must pay for it.
Or something. I mean, Qatar gave him an airplane.
Yes. We don't have airplanes to give.
Come on, SAA,
our National Defense Force. We simply don't have planes to give.
We don't. SAA leases Defense Force planes. Air Force planes don't work. We don't have planes to give.
Uh-huh. So what do we give then? Because in as much as you can have a round of golf.
That's the dilemma that someone like Ramaphosa and I mean, just the body politic generally has. How do you, I mean, Europe got slapped with, so there's a big, you know, winner, chicken dinner, Europe only got a 15% tariff deal. It was 30, it was 10, then it was 30, then it was 10, and now it's 15. And this is a winning trade deal?
I think that perhaps, if we're going to look at it from taking a page out of China, and again, we bring up China, not just because they've gone toe-to-toe with the United States, not just because you've been a Mr. Miyagi in your life. We bring China up because there are lessons to be learned from this.
Yeah.
Is there, China spent a lot of time bolstering and beefing up their positioning in the global ecosystem to then say, we are an alternative to the United States. Mm-hmm. And we can prove that. They've spent decades doing that, right? Perhaps for South Africa, and I don't know if this is even possible, is reestablishing our position as the dominant force on the African continent. Africa has almost started to go its own ways. East goes this way, West goes this way, North, South. There's that divide,
right? It's a fragment slash realignment of the friendships that have existed since Bretton Woods.
Right. So from an African standpoint, we used to be the largest economy. I think we still are. We kind of trade that off with Nigeria every now and then. We don't have a military base. That's a US base. But, you know, we also don't have oil, so it doesn't really matter. But at the same time, we used to have the largest airline on the African continent. That now, if I'm not mistaken, sits with Ethiopia. So we've lost our positioning on the continent. We used to be the hub.
That's a good point.
For everything
and
to come
clear,
here.
When you're saying used to, we're not talking pre-94. We're talking 10, 20 years ago.
That's it.
Just around the corner.
Everything used to come into Africa, and the gateway into Africa used to be South Africa. You're now having guys like Dubai Ports World, DPW, that bought Imperial Logistics, setting up ports on the East Coast because it's closer to Dubai and they're able to do that. It's not as far south as South Africa. The reality is we still have an edge in the market from an infrastructure point of view.
Yes.
If we leave Transnet aside and we actually have a functional rail and logistics system, it is the best on the continent.
Mm-hmm.
Bar none. Mm-hmm. Right? And if we then start to dig our heels into saying we will have to take the brunt of this for 4 or 5 years from the United States. But in that 4 or 5 years, we're going to build South Africa. We're going to realign. We're going to prioritize making sure that by the time President Trump leaves office in the White House, whoever the next president of the United States is, understands that South Africa is important to the African continent and to the world.
I think you're right. It's going to be, the trick is, it's going to be 4 to 5 years. It's going to be...
It's not an overnight thing.
It's going to be a painful 4 to 5 years. And can our body politic deliver?
Do we have the decision-making capabilities to make the tough calls?
I mean, the evidence says no.
The evidence says no. And that's the painful part. That's the painful reality that we have to contend with. We hope that this doesn't have implications on South Africans at large. If it has implications on certain individuals, then that is for those individuals to take up with the United States. And perhaps that could be the saving grace of the South African story, is that it is not affecting the people. But at the end of the day, we need decisive leadership and we need decisions that are going to not drive the agendas of few forward, but the agendas of the country forward. Isn't that what we elect officials to do?
Yeah.
Supposedly, that's what we elect them to do. That's the deep dive. We're going to leave the conversation on that note. We're going to get into our investor insights. We're going to be taking a look at a stock that we've had on our wall. We're going to be revisiting that stock, but we're also going to be taking a look at some really bizarre things that have been taking place in South Africa. So stick around for that. And we're wrapping things up with investor insights. We're taking a look at some, I don't even know what to call them, potentially bizarre coincidences. See what we make of them. Seem to be happening more and more often these days. And we're going to take a look at some of them. And then we're going to update one of the stocks on our wall, potentially other stocks as well. And we're going to, of course, leave you with an unfiltered opinion. Sai, City Power, the organization responsible for providing power to Johannesburg, has been going through some financial difficulties. Everything from a financial report that shows a 16 billion rand hole that cannot be plugged or that is unexplained and that's been missing and all of that, right? To saying to us that they are struggling to deliver services in certain regions and therefore, you know, it's tough, we need to be paying. And then you find out that the Hawks are investigating them for 500 million rands worth of fraud, of which 300 million at some point went into things like air fresheners and mops. That's all. That's all I've got for you, eh?
I have. Sorry, air fresheners and mops.
And mops, amongst other things.
I mean, these aren't like phrases for something else.
No, actual air fresheners and mops. Well, at least that's what the contracts would say, I suppose that's what the contracts would say. There is also a system. There was a...
I mean, I thought you were going to say like Lamborghinis and holidays to Cannes. Or maybe Ibiza for a weekend.
No, just mops and air fresheners, ASI. There was a system. There was a system that was meant to improve things. It was an 8 million rand system that was supposed to be employed by the city.
Curious about this system.
The system was supposed to cost 8 million rand.
Yeah.
Ended up costing 100 million rand.
Now, yeah.
Again, on the 8 million rand, there was everything from, it was supposed to include networking, cybersecurity, power supplies, UPSs, all of those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to be, again, around 8 million rand.
Mm-hmm.
Engineering, design, testing, commissioning, installation, all of those figures. 8.66 million rand was what the budget was initially quoted as.
Mm.
There was no adjustments to the scopes and all of that. Subsequently, paid for charges amounted to just over 100 million rand. So I'll give you an example. For the budget that was set aside for installation and construction related to the system was 120,000 rand. The actual expenditure for that particular line item was 17.5 million rand.
So I'm still looking up the prices of mops. So I found a mop. To be clear, it comes with a trolley and a winger. And I mean, this is like an over-kitted, like, you know, this has got bowls, whistles, and wheels.
And some, yeah?
8,000.
8,000.
But if you just want a summer mop, and this is a fancy mop, it's a 3-in-1 high-reach window cleaner Shanisa mop. 270.
Okay. Have you found air fresheners yet?
Yeah, but you know, it's the thing, and I've been saying this, so it's like when we build a power plant like Medupi,
Kusile and Medupi, yeah.
And all of
yeah.
And they cost 2, 3, 4x as much.
Mm.
And truthfully, they just bought a power plant in America and it was with the UK and it cost 2x as much. And that's not, when the money is stolen, it offends me. But at least leave me a functioning working thing.
Leave something like that I can use.
But like not a mop. Like well, if you're gonna not build the hospital and you're gonna steal the money, no man. Build the hospital and then cream some money off the top. Like that would offend me.
Leave the service.
But at least
there
would be a hospital. You know, when you fix the road, fix it and then cream some off the top.
And don't fix it so that it breaks the very next day. Fix it.
If you're gonna scam us, at least
and I think that's part of the problem, right?
And to be clear, best don't scam us, but let's
well, I mean, let's be alive to the fact that whether we like it or not, it's been happening for a long time, right? So my thing around it is as well, you know, and I suppose this is part of what FATF had an issue with in South Africa as well.
Mm.
You know where the money went. You mm-hmm. have the bank account the money was paid into.
Mm-hmm.
You can quite easily go back to those parties and individuals and say, you need to give us the money back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, you face the challenge of those individuals saying, well, we provided you with a tender, you accepted the tender, or you accepted the price or whatever it is, and we rendered the service. But then prove to us that you rendered the service. Now, delivering mops is fairly easy to do, especially if I'm paying 10 rand for them and billing R1 million per mop or whatever it is mm-hmm. that the money is. But like you're saying, there's so many situations where the actual service or the actual product is not delivered and there's no recourse, no repercussions, no accountability, nothing of that happens from that perspective. And then one wonders why we have the problems that we have, why people then don't want to. I mean, so part of why this came up was there was a comment around the private sector sitting on 1.4 trillion rand or so in cash in the South African ecosystem and not deploying that money.
Yes.
And there was there's been huge pressure from the government to say, no, the private sector must come in, they must get involved, they must do this, they must do that. But let's be clear, every single time that you've had the opportunity to do something, you've delivered nothing.
Yeah.
And so for you to then come and say to private capital that works hard to generate its private capital, to then just say, no, give it to us, we're going to put it to work, we demand that you do this, how does that make sense, right? Private capital, I mean, a trillion rands or so in the South African economy would be fantastic right now.
Mm.
But how do you expect private capital to deploy when you yourselves can't show that we should trust you?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's it, right? I mean, that's just it. And to be clear, private capital shouldn't, and I'm not even sure that it does have a higher level of responsibility than public, but they just not going to, because if it goes horribly wrong, like there's actually implications. Like that lady from EOH. I mean, okay, it's 10 years later and it's only $500,000, but to be clear, it is 10
million.
The lady
who said she had a PhD and didn't.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And that is, you know, $500,000. Yeah, it took 10 years. I mean, but the point is it did happen eventually and she can't be a director for 10 years.
Eventually, I suppose, right? But I mean, at this rate, we can't afford for these things to continue happening at this rate
and
then not having the accountability and then expecting that our economy is going to grow. We've had a stagnant economy for more than 10 years and now you're sitting there saying to the productive members of the economy that we want more out of you and we're going to do even less.
Yeah.
Makes no sense. Let's move on to our stock pick. Let's move on to our wall because this is a conversation that can be around forever. We're adjusting something to the wall. We've got something on the wall already. We are re-looking at some of the things that are on the wall and we're seeing how we make some changes, starting with Alphabet.
Yeah, so we spoke earlier, or whenever it was, around Alphabet. I mean, I very much like it. I also think it is, a while ago we were saying this is actually a cheap-looking stock. Now, it's run a whole bunch. Let's be clear around that. On the back of the results, it's up 13% in a month. But like year-to-date, it's up only 2%. It's up 15% over the last year. This is Alphabet sitting on a forward PE of sub-20. The 10-year mean is 38. Let me zoom that in because, 10-year mean is 35-year, which is maybe better, is 26. I just think Alphabet's looking cheap. And I think that there are two things that are spooking the market. The one is there's a couple of cases happening right now with the Department of Justice. They're being sued. There are two cases ongoing. They have lost and there's going to be remedial action. We're not sure what that remedial action will be. It might be you have to spin off DoubleClick or whatever, Chrome or something like that. Truthfully, I think the sum of the parts that would actually be good for Google shareholders. It's like if if Amazon spun out AWS, I think the sum of the parts would be more than Amazon. So I don't think, and notwithstanding, if we look back at the Microsoft example, so the one judge Meta, and not Meta as in Facebook, Meta as in Mr. Meta, or maybe it's Mrs. Judge Meta is going to make an announcement in August. But of course, Google will sue. I mean, this is the Microsoft case. By the time the DOJ came down and said, yo, Microsoft was like, yeah, but we're not even the biggest browser anymore. Not this, this little thing called Chrome that's eating up our lunch. So I'm not overly concerned about that. The one area I am a little bit concerned about is their Google.com. I mean, I don't know when last you've done a search on there. It is a horror mess. I've stopped using Chrome because, man, Chrome uses more memory than you can imagine. So, you know, I don't use Chrome. I don't use Google.com. I use Perplexity. I occasionally go to Google.com. And when I do, I'm reminded why I hate it so much. But they did talk around 450 monthly active users on their AI platform. So they're getting that space there. They are spending vast amount. They're up their CapEx spend. Their cash and cash equivalents, $95 billion. They're spending, you know, tens of billions every quarter on CapEx, but their free cash flow every quarter is like $40 billion. They can afford it. They are building for the next level. We saw an interesting letter from the Microsoft CEO who basically said our business has never been stronger and we're going to fire 6,000 people. My words, not his. Because of the efficiencies that they're getting internally from the likes of AI and stuff. Mm. And I just think that they are cheap right now.
So we've had Alphabet, Google sitting in neutral for the longest time on our wall. Is it time to move them up?
Yeah. I think so. I mean, so I spoke about them a little while ago, a few weeks ago, in fact, maybe a few months ago. And as I say, they have run since then. They were 160-ish when I last chatted. They're now 193. They are, let's be clear, just off highs. But if you look at lots of the crazy valuations in the Mag 7, they are not these crazy valuations. To be clear, and there are risks. I mean, you know, their key product, which is .com, which is Google.com, is the dog's breakfast. YouTube is the biggest thing watched on TV. And to be clear, TV, not mobiles and computers and tablets. Biggest watched on TV in America, bigger than cable, bigger than Netflix, bigger than absolutely everything.
That's a very interesting point. While we're looking at stocks that are in neutral territory, I want to see if we can quickly glance at Telkom. They finalized that SwiftNet sale, 6 point something billion rands, but also they went through a rebrand recently. They've changed their logo. It's a new Telkom. Ooh, fancy. We had them as neutral because, well, we looked at the telecom space. We didn't really see where they'd fit. Do we move them?
I don't like telecom, but on a PE of 10-ish and a price to book sub 1 and a dividend yield of around 3, I mean, they're not expensive.
But what's left in Telkom other than the OpenServe business?
Well, OpenServe, which is a nice little business. And they've got, you know, okay, and they've got the mobile network. I don't think our market's big enough for 4 mobile networks, but...
Well, considering Cell C sold off all of their infrastructure and they now leverage off of the other 2 networks as an MVNO, I don't know if we still have 4, technically.
Also true. We might not have 4.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't think it's enough to... I don't think changing your logo is enough for us to move you out.
No, logos don't impress me. I just don't like the sector. And I tell you why, because basically you are a utility with insane high capex. Now, a year ago at $20, we probably were wrong when we said it's not so great, but now it's at almost 60. Mm. The utilities with capex, that's the last thing you want.
Now, but they've cut down their capex, to be fair, by selling off that SwiftNet business. So you've saved a lot of money now. You don't have to maintain all those towers.
You don't have to maintain it, but that's still indirectly a cost, or directly a cost to the business, because they need access to those towers. So they might not be going and buying a 6G modem in a few years to attach
but
to the tower.
But leasing one.
But someone is.
Fair enough. So we're undecided on that one. We might just leave it where it is for now. And speaking of leaving things where they are, we've come to the end of the show, folks. We're going to leave you. But before we do, you know the drill. We don't leave you without an unfiltered opinion of the week. Si, I want to get your thoughts on delivery services before we get into the unfiltered opinion of the week. Are you an order-in kind of person?
I haven't used a food delivery service in about 2 years. There's an exception. So if I want pizza, I go to my pizza place and they bring it. But the Uber Eats and stuff like that, no, because I live in Rosebank and like there are 40 or 50 restaurants within a 4-minute walk of where I live. Why am I ordering in?
What about groceries? So
again,
Pick and Pays.
So I used to use the 60-60, but now I just feel silly because actually the guy on the motorbike has to go the long way around the block because of the one-way streets. And again, I can walk it quicker. So I haven't used 60-60 unless I'm out of... Okay, to be clear, like when I'm down in Durban and sunning myself on the beach, yeah, I'm ordering curry from Britannia and I'm doing it on the app. And I'm ordering beer from Checkers because I'm a lazy oak. But when I live in the heart of Rosebank, like I've lived here 2 years now and I haven't used a delivery thing in 2 years. I do Uber all the time, but like the deliveries, I used to, not anymore.
So that's the unfiltered opinion. And I like that you brought up 60-60 because the unfiltered opinion is potentially around them. It's more of a question, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to open it up to our community as well. Tell us your experiences with this as well. Are Checkers 60-60 drivers or delivery riders the blue lights of the retail space? In other words, are they like taxi drivers? Are they a law unto themselves? And do they do whatever they want whenever they want? I, for one, have seen a lot of 60-60 drivers abiding by the laws. I think South Africa still suffers from the fact that we don't have enough awareness around motorbikes in general. Motorcycle users. There's too many motorcycle accidents that are happening on the road. We don't have enough awareness around that. That, I'm going to put a pin in and park there. But around the Checkers, the 60-60, the delivery services, it goes beyond just the delivery part of it, right? Mm-hmm. Think about the in-store experience as well. Mm-hmm. You now have people in store rushing to pack orders because they're going to be out at a certain time, mm-hmm. rushing past you as you're doing your shopping, parking the trolley everywhere, picking up items, throwing, moving, all of that chaos that comes with wanting to provide efficient delivery and efficient services. Is that now creating an environment where people are now living by their own rules for the sake of the deliverables and the KPIs that exist there in the same way that we kind of saw happen with something like the taxi industry?
I think so.
Okay.
But hang on, I want to go down a little bit of a rabbit hole here.
Let's go.
So you're talking about we don't understand bikes in Johannesburg. So I remember, just in South Africa, I remember coming up to Johannesburg in the 80s. And when you would stop at a stop street, there would be like your cars and then there would be 10, 15, 20 motorbikes because that's how stuff moved around. There weren't couriers. The facts had just come out. No one had them. How were you moving your share certificates, which had to be physically dematerialized from A to B? It was on scooters. So then there was a Scooters Union, which was a union for the scooter drivers. Mm. Then, fun fact, in Durban in the early 90s, late 80s, a band called Scooters Union with Res Johnson as the front man came out and I think made one, maybe two albums. Go listen to the albums.
Okay.
Good
okay.
Durban rock.
Good Durban rock.
Okay, maybe rock. I should just say Durban rock.
Just Durban rock.
And the video is done in Michael somebody's parents' house and I was the cameraman.
Okay.
Mm.
Huh.
I studied film and video, man.
Studied film and video, programs, websites, and ran the Comrades sub 7 hours.
No.
Sub 7:30. Okay. Yeah. Sub 7:30.
I thought you were saying sub 7.
Well, you could have if you really wanted to. I suppose if she was at the finish line, you might have run a little bit faster.
If I was still dating her, I might have, but she had broken up with me already, so I was probably in tears.
Oh, okay. Unfiltered opinion of the week. We'd love to get your thoughts on that. Has the convenience of delivery ruined the in-store experience the same way Sai says that Google has ruined search and the fact that taxi drivers have potentially ruined the road, stopping exactly where they want to and not abiding by the laws? Give us your thoughts, give us your opinions, give us your unfiltered opinions, because that's what the show's about. Until next time, investing isn't hard, just try it. The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests, and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions.